It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Monday the 17th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Usually when we talk surveillance, our feelings are mixed. But a new project from conservation groups, a satellite company, and help from Google plans to use surveillance for good. Global Fishing Watch hopes to shed light on the problem of illegal fishing practices around the world. Not the kind of fishing when you click a dangerous link in your email, the kind that is depleting important fish populations and ocean ecosystems. Josh Jezza has been following this story for The Verge. Hi, Josh. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm wondering how much of a cost illegal fishing is to the industry and to the world. This is a problem.
Yeah, illegal fishing is a big problem. Oceana, the conservation group that is in charge of this program, has estimated that it's about 20% of the seafood industry worldwide, $10 to $20 billion.
Wow.
And the FAO estimates that about a third of the world's fisheries are over-harvested.
Tell me about this project. The goal here is to track illegal fishing using mapping, and Google's involved?
It's in partnership with a couple of different organizations. But the core technology uses data from this micro-satellite company, SpaceQuest, which has four satellites that pick up radio transmissions from large ships. So what these groups have done is develop an algorithm that can look for patterns and determine the probability that any boat is a fishing boat.
Can we really figure out which boats are fishing boats and which of those boats are doing things they shouldn't be doing? I guess if they're in a location where they're not supposed to be fishing, then we can have a sense that they're doing something they're not supposed to be doing.
That's the hope. It's not perfect. It gets some false positives. The other big limitation is that it doesn't pick up smaller boats that aren't required to use the identification system, or truly illegal fishers who turn off their radios when they enter like a marine conservation zone. Oceana says it can pick up weird behavior like that, like turning your identification system on and off.
What else do you think is interesting about this story, or how might it develop?
The hope is that by providing some data, they can shine a light on illegal fishing and create pressure to stop it. It's a problem that is very easy to ignore, and there's not always a lot of incentives to go after illegal fishermen in places where it can be a large part of the economy.
Josh Jezza is an editor at The Verge. Josh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I was out the other night and a friend asked me, which side of the net neutrality debate should I be on? The question proves that for all the talk about net neutrality, a lot of people still don't understand it. So today, we asked our TechSplainer friend and co-founder of Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society, Jonathan Zittrain, to help us out. He starts with the big picture.
The biggest picture view is the original design of the internet is as a best efforts network, also known as send it and pray, or every packet an adventure. The idea of being able to deliver broadcast images, movies, and such to people, best efforts might kind of run afoul of that because you don't want somebody at the most suspenseful moment of Game of Thrones to be left hanging as the bits try to find their way to tell you which way the sword falls.
The old buffer circle.
Exactly. Back in the day, this wasn't such a big deal because it was just commonly understood that the provision of internet services meant you send bits, you receive bits. We'd make best efforts to get them back and forth. But there came to be questions. A statement attributed to Ed Whittaker of AT&T, in which he said, these outside content providers, like Google, want to use my wires for free. They basically want to suck the blood from our veins. Why would I possibly allow that? It's my road. Maybe I want a tax on the trucks going over it.
Otherwise, I can't repair the potholes and make the road wider and bigger and nicer.
Yeah, and the more I can collect, the more it means I can invest in the network.
Talk to me a little bit about where Tom Wheeler is, the position that he's in right now.
If you are Tom Wheeler right now, first order set of questions are to try to get the policy right. What would be a thing to do that doesn't bankrupt good American companies while at the same time providing for great bandwidth so that lots of cool things can happen on the internet?
What's the second thing?
The second thing you got to do is, do I have the votes for it? The next thing you might see is an immediate race to the courthouse to litigate this for the next 5 to 7 years. And that has an element of depression to it that could make a chairman want to say, can I just cut a deal and we all agree you basically won't sue over it? I would just recognize that the open internet rules that the FCC did have in place until January were rules that industry had already by and large reconciled itself to. It may well be that the squawking we'll see, you have to figure out how much they are genuinely worried that this is going to be screwing up their business versus you have these lawyers working for you and this team, you're paying them, they might as well complain about anything that could be remotely bad.
Jonathan Zittrain, our friend at Harvard. Jonathan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ben.
Before we go, this story is amazing. North London resident Frank Swain is slowly going deaf, but his attention to the act of listening has resulted in an amazing project. This is the sound of Swain's hacked hearing aids picking up Wi-Fi signals. With the help of an iPhone, the project Phantom Terrains measures signal strength, encryption, and other stuff, and turns it into sound going into Swain's ears. A whole different perspective on our increasingly connected world. To listen and learn more, visit facebook.com/marketplacetech. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.